This is episode 40 of the Reading Coves podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For March 2014, we're discussing We Are Water by Wally Lam. Hello, so I am Millennia in Florida.
And I am Roberta in Georgia.
And Roberta and I are here to discuss the Reading Cove's 160th pick, We Are Water by Wally Lam. And this was chosen by Cove member Lori up in New England. I think she's in Massachusetts. Let's dive right in. What did we think about We Are Water? There's so much to discuss with this book.
Overall, I liked it. You know, it said there's a lot to think about. There's a lot you can look into, even though it's not like a real literary book. It's not just your typical contemporary fiction either.
No, it definitely isn't. So what did you find most interesting? Like, what are the things that happened that were most memorable for you?
Even just in the way that Annie and Orion met, even though it seemed like they were different people, with him being more educated and her not. But at the same time, they both had come from really rough childhoods. Mm-hmm. And had brought a lot of baggage with them. And at first you would think they wouldn't click because they were so different. But I think both of them just sort of sensed something in the other, this type of experience they had been through, you know, sort of a lost type of childhood, not what they had, either one had really planned.
Well, I think that Annie definitely had the rougher childhood.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, Orion, I was calling him Orion. I don't know. I always butcher names, so.
It probably is like the stars. Maybe I'm.
But, yeah. So I think that he, you know, had his issues not knowing about his father and stuff like that, which is kind of, you know, common.
Right.
But less common is, you know, the being abused, as sexually molested as a child.
Right.
Like Annie was.
Right.
So I thought that was an important piece of the story. The things I found most interesting didn't really happen until like the last 50 pages. I found like much of it skimmable because he has a very rambling writing style.
Well, yeah, I mean, because really you're just learning lots and lots about the background of these characters. By the end, you feel as though you know them all very well because of all this detail we learn about them, which is good or bad, depending on, you know, your viewpoint on the way the book's written.
Yeah, I don't know that we do get a lot of detail, but I think a lot of it's also repetitious. That's what I mean by it's skimmable. Like, you're not going to miss anything. Each character, you know, it's told from both parents and then all the children. And then you have a chapter on Ruth Fletcher, who is the wife of the woman the man who murdered Joseph.
Right.
And then the Kent Kelly chapter. So they're all coming from, which I appreciated that because you get, you know, a really well-rounded perspective, but they're each, like, all the kids are telling you, you know, the same thing that you already learned from Orion and Annie. And, you know, it just became really repetitive. It wasn't adding anything new.
I mean, but, you know, it did give you their point of view of how these different situations affected them personally. But, yeah, you know, there probably could have been, you know, a little bit edited out and it would have been an even better book.
Yeah, a tighter.
A tighter fitting book, yes.
Yeah, but I agree that we do get to know these people very well. And I did become invested in what was going to happen. Like, I was concerned about Andrew and what he had done to Kent.
Right.
I mean, like, that the end was the best part of the book to me, because that's when things actually happened. I mean, it was so funny how it's slow, snail pace slow for 500 pages, and then all of a sudden it jumps ahead 3 whole years and then starts flying through all these things that happened. Where did it cut and jump 3 years? Like, right in the middle of a scene.
Oh, after
Andrew, you know, got in a fight with Kent. He was, you know, going after him. And I really felt that when he was doing that, it was his entire childhood of rage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Fueling him. Because Annie had been abusing Andrew because Andrew reminded her of Kent.
Right.
And that, I was like wondering too, that kept me reading, because I'm like, oh my goodness, is Kent the twins' father? Because when she would say that Andrew looks like Kent, when she would look at Andrew and, oh, she would see Kent, I'm like, why? Why does he look like Kent?
Well, I think it's just because they were related. You know, he was a very strong-willed little boy and you know, because he even said even though there was no real need for the abuse, you know, she kind of just lost it, went off in her dark place, you know, every time that Andrew set her off. But he would set her off. He really was trying to push her. You know, it's not right to abuse a child, but at the same time, children, you know, you have to be very patient and calm because children will, you know, always try to test their limits. And
yeah, especially he was a smart aleck.
Yeah, he was a smart, especially he, you know, he really pushed it. I guess sometimes you almost think after the first time that he pushed it to, you know, see what she would do. Of course, you know, she almost, you know, made even a bigger tragedy when she hit him that time with the mallet. I mean, that's almost pretty.
But I think there was a reason he was provoking it.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, I think a lot of times she was distant with him. Yeah,
exactly.
She'd be there to, you know, and they used to have that saying, was it the soggy potato chip, that sometimes children will do stuff when they know they're going to get in trouble because at least they'll get attention, even though it's not the right kind of attention.
Exactly.
So,
but I think he provoked it because he wanted his mother's attention, or he was retaliating against her for how she treated him differently than the other two girls.
Right, right.
And I think that was what was at play there. And, you know, it's interesting to see them grow up and then to see how all the kids banded together and they wanted to protect their mother, because that's usually how it goes with children.
Right.
You know, very rarely do children, like, try to get their parents in trouble when they're abusing them, because it's like, stick with the evil you know,
right.
What's going to happen to me if my mommy's taken away or something.
Yeah,
you know?
It could be worse. And I think they knew, even if they couldn't really, you know, say it when they were younger, I think they knew that something was seriously wrong with her, that, you know.
Yeah, she wasn't right.
She wasn't right. But at the same time, you know, the dad, like, as he said, he just, when he finally, it all came out, you know, he was just really upset with himself, because here he was listening to all these other people's problems that mm-hmm. weren't near as bad for the most part, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then he couldn't really see what was going on in his own household. But I think it was a matter, like, the children were being their mom's enabler. So, you know, after these horrible things happened, then all of a sudden the water was smoothed out again. And mm-hmm. and it looked pretty normal. And so I think, you know, the dad wanted to believe that, oh, yeah, you know, he's kind of a clumsy kid. And he's
mm-hmm.
he's kind of got a wild side. So, you know, he never thought to question that anything else could have happened.
No, he bought that, oh, he just fell down the stairs and whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever they told him. And I thought that was pretty good development there with that whole family dynamic. It's, you know, people might say, well, all three of them, none of them would have told their dad. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, their dad was not the parent who was with them most of the time.
Right.
And it was the mother who was nurturing, who was, you know, sort of the whole rounded parent. She was always with them. She was, for the most part, always there every day to day. So that's who they were loyal to.
Right.
And that was really powerful when, you know, Annie had to face it when, you know, Orion exploded on her when she was there taking care of him, which that's when my feelings about Annie changed, by the way. I really didn't like her much the whole time until Orion's, you know, assault. And then, you know, she postpones her and Viveka's honeymoon
mm-hmm.
so that she can go and look after him.
Right.
And I thought, okay, you know, that showed me a thread of her character that I didn't feel was there before.
Right. She could overcome, you know, this thing where before it was like all about her.
Exactly.
And then, you know, all of a sudden she could think, well, you know, even though I'm not in love with him anymore, I do love him. And he, you know, he's part of my past. And you know, somebody's got to take care of him. So, you know, she stepped up and did it. You know, like I said, even when she could have just turned her back. The same time, you know, when you find little by little, you find out all this thing that happened in her childhood, you know, besides the abuse, then, you know, this horrific thing. Anybody would have been scarred for life just by having witnessed what happened, you know, in the flood with her original family. So
I really felt, you know, up until that point, which was the bulk of the book, really.
Right.
500 pages. That she was just really whiny, Annie. Whine. And kind of was sleepwalking through life. She never really took responsibility for the choices she made as an adult, like, you know, the relationship she got in and the pregnancy and then, you know, what all happened. And then even when she ended up with Orion, it was just sort of like, oh, she just fell into everything.
Yeah.
She never really took responsibility for anything or any direction that her life went in. I feel like she, you know, it's funny, she married a shrink and she so desperately needed a shrink.
Right.
After her childhood being molested by Kent. And we need to talk about Kent's chapters.
Oh, yeah.
I just, bottom line, thought a lot of the hand-to-body descriptions of molestation were very excessive and unnecessary.
Yeah.
And disturbing.
Well, I think that's what the author wanted you to be, very disturbed. But at the same time, it could have been toned down a little bit. I have to agree with that.
It just kind of makes me wonder about the author. Because, you know, why would you, you know, to put yourself in the mind of that character to bring forth that scene, why would anyone want to do that? I mean, I can understand we read about people being murdered. We read about a lot of horrible things.
Right.
But when it comes to a grown man molesting a 6-year-old,
yeah,
we can use our imagination to know that what he did to her, and without the author having to write it out for us. So I don't think, you know, a commercial audience needed that. You know, we're not, you know, psych majors who are looking to do research on pedophiles.
Right.
I thought, ew, and it just makes me look twice at that author. I wouldn't leave my kids alone with him.
I think he's a teacher in real life. That's what I thought.
I find that really strange. But yeah, those chapters were important. I still appreciate the perspective of Kent Kelly.
Yeah. A lot of times you'll read a book, especially a longer one, and think, well, you know, these people may be famous now, but it still would be good to have a little, you know, better editing so you could get the shock factor and everything.
Yeah, I mean, you can say, okay, even when Annie's recalling it, because she said something to Andrew when she was telling him about it, when she finally let it out.
Right.
And I thought that she was descriptive, and I thought, okay, that's appropriate.
Right.
I can deal with that.
Right.
Because she's speaking from, you know, as the victim.
Right.
And she's releasing so that I can deal with. Okay. But then when we go to Kent, I mean, all you need to say is, okay, he went into her room. He went into, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. She was molested. Whatever. I mean, you can say it, and the reader is left to imagine what specifically happened.
Yeah. I said, well, I think the only thing I could think is maybe the author was thinking that we would be, you know, with all these horrible, gory details, that we would get more in the mind of the, you know, abuser. But
yeah.
I mean, overall, like I said, I like the book a lot, but like I said, there's never going to be the perfect book. There's always something that you think, well, that was okay, but, you know, it could have been edited a little bit differently, and it will still have the same effect.
Right.
You see, and the thing about him, too, is without him having, like, because they even said he didn't have to wear that monitor for a while after a while because he behaved himself. But the sad thing is, all I've ever read or seen is these people that are pedophiles, they're never cured. You know, you just, you know, have to keep a close eye on them and keep them away from, you know, whoever they prey on. And the whole reason he came back looking for, you know, Annie was like because these yucky feelings he had before, and he just wanted to see what had happened to her, not to apologize or not to, you know, say, I'm sorry what I did, because I don't think he had any remorse even all those years later.
No, he didn't. And he said something really ridiculous to Andrew, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what, but just something disgusting. You think, yeah, the world doesn't need him. And it seemed that nobody even missed him.
No.
No one was looking for him.
I don't condone murder or whatever. You know, and Andrew did this, but I still think, you know, even if Andrew does, you don't know if he's going to turn himself in or not.
But at the end, the way the book ends, he says to his father, you know, I'm thinking about turning myself in because he's just not able to live with this guilt.
Right. Well, and you could see that, too, because, you know, he was even though he was in the military, you know, he was in the healing profession. You know, he was, you know, working as a nurse and helping these people that had been through horrible trauma. So he wasn't the type of person you usually think that who would, you know, go off on a murderous attack. But it's just that guy, you know, he realized that guy had, you know, really ruined his mother's life and had, you know, was probably the reason he had suffered all this abuse himself. So it was just like this crime of passion, this crime of, like I said, you know, sudden just madness. I mean, it's still not, you just can't go killing people just because they had it coming, you know. But at the same time, you think, well, if he did turn himself in and they went into all the background, I don't know that he would, you know, be up for murder one or whatever. It'd be probably more like what do they call it, voluntary manslaughter or something like that.
The author did a very good job of drawing these circumstances together, because I put myself in the mind of Orion. His son, you know, confesses this to him, and Orion, you know, does what I think most parents would do. Don't you tell another living soul. You know, you just, this is between me and you. I will take this to my grave, and you just put it out of your mind and get on with your life. You don't need to, you know, go spend the rest of your life in prison. He had it coming, blah, 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 blah.
And like I said, no one was looking for him. All of his relatives were basically dead, so no one was probably going to even notice he was missing.
There was nothing said that anybody came looking for Camp Kelly.
No.
Or that there was a missing persons reported or anything.
Right.
So, yeah, but Andrew still, being who he was, it was dimming his light.
Oh,
he couldn't
yeah.
go on with his life. And I put myself in Orion's place, and I feel like I would tell my son, look, you know, do what you have to do, but don't turn yourself in.
Yeah.
Do what you go talk to somebody, and don't tell them specifically what you did. But if, you know, you need to get some therapy to try to, you know, be able to put this behind you and come to peace with what happened and decide that you don't need to, you know, go spend your life in jail for it.
Right.
And I think that I would have just tried to plead with him a little more, because at the end, Orion just kind of said, like, okay, well, if that's what you feel you need to do, you know,
yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want him to go to jail for that.
No.
But I understand that his conscience was killing him.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, the author kind of left that open-ended. Like, we don't know.
Well,
what do you think? Do you think he turns himself in?
I think eventually he will, because, you know, it's hard for anybody to live with that kind of, you know, guilt. You know, it's going to ruin your health. You know, besides your conscience, it's going to ruin your health after a while, all that stuff just, you know, inside of you.
He's not really living.
Right. He's not really living. He's just, you know, kind of existing, and, you know, had to leave the military and everything else. So
I think you're right. I think that's why I had that strong reaction, because I saw that that's probably what he's going to do. And I'm thinking, no, Orion, you need to talk him out of it.
Talk to him some more. Talk him out of it.
Talk him out of it, you know, to help him come to grips with it. You know, to show him that he can, it's okay for him to continue on his life. But you know what? If he decides it's not, then that's understandable. And like you said, you know, he probably wouldn't have to spend that much time in jail.
No.
I think he will get jail time.
Oh, yeah.
But probably not, you know, 20 years or something.
No, no.
But, yeah, that was an unfortunate situation. I kind of wish Kent hadn't died and he just kind of hurt him.
Yeah, I wish he just kind of beat the snot out of him, so to
speak. Yeah.
Messed him up a little bit.
Yes, something. And then Annie and Viveka. So Annie leaves Orion after, 27 years of marriage for a woman.
Right.
My thoughts on that is I didn't really feel like she was in love with Viveka. I got more of a best friend vibe from them. It felt like to me, like instead of falling in love with Viveka, Annie really fell in love with a different lifestyle, with living in New York, being an artist, not having to raise children, because, you know, she and Viveka won't have that type of life that she had with Orion. Her main problem wasn't that she wasn't in love with Orion, I don't think. It was that, you know, he was away at work and she was left with the children. And I didn't like her because she was kind of like blaming the kids almost. And it's like, no, you chose to get married and have children. Hello.
Right.
You made this decision to have these kids.
Right.
Or have this child.
No one forced you into it.
No one forced it. So even though right now, you know, yes, we can acknowledge you're feeling like this is kind of tying you down from doing other things, but don't forget that you made this choice. This child didn't just show up.
Right.
And that's what I was getting from her, with all her whining and being unhappy and raising the kids and, oh, I got to do this with the kids. And then, you know, they still grew up with the feeling that she didn't really nurture them at all. She was always down in the basement working on her art.
Right.
So that was interesting. But I really didn't feel like she was, I didn't feel like in love vibes from her and Viveka. Oh. I felt more like besties, like we're really close, close friends. That's kind of what I got. I felt like she was just falling in love with a different way of living. That's it.
Well, yeah. And you know, Annie had always felt that even though her husband would try to give her time so she could work on the art, have something different, you know, something else in her mm-hmm. life besides the family. But, you know, it was sort of just a gratuitous thing. He was just doing it to keep her from being real angry and whining, you know, not whining at him even more, because she was one of the ones that you think, you know, it's terrible that the minute the husband walks in the door, she just hits him with all these things. Yeah. The thing with, you know, her now wife is that she's, you know, the big art person. And so she really supports her artist career. And it's not just because that she helped her, you know, get recognition or helped her, you know, with the money and everything.
And she makes a nice commission off of all her paintings and her artwork.
Well, that's nice. But at the same time, I mean, they both had the same passion for art that
they do.
And, you know, that her husband was never going to have. And so that's going to attract you to somebody else that you have similar passions or things in your life. And, you know, instead of having therapy, she was taking out some of her anger by making these different pieces of art.
Very much so. And yet she didn't see herself as an angry person.
No.
And she was making a distinction. I forget who she was talking to. I think it was Andrew. And they were talking about some other anger thing. And, you know, she made a distinction to say that, you know, she was expressing it in a different way, or her anger was coming from a different place than that other. And I thought that was interesting because that seemed true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems that the majority of the other members of our group really enjoyed We Are Water.
Right.
I've seen a lot of B pluses. I've seen a couple A's from people. For the most part, everyone's really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too. I'm just not a fan of the writing style. I think I gave it a B minus C plus.
Well, and that's good for you.
I mean, I enjoyed it at the end, and that's right. Why I would kind of lean to a B minus, right? And it's a good character study.
Oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, a good character study, because you get to know these people really well, and, mm-hmm. and see what makes them tick and what, you know, made their life the way it is. So you kind of feel sorry for Joseph too, because he did have talent, and I think he was basically a good person, but he was just sort of a victim of his own, you know, time.
Of his times,
time in history, you know. If he'd been around nowadays, that wouldn't have happened, you know.
No, I doubt it would have. And then for, you know, the guy who killed him to get away with it, I forget his name.
Claude
Fletcher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had to put it down for a short time to finish something else. But you get mm-hmm. back to it, and all of a sudden you get to the thing about Belinda, you know, helping there. And I think, oh, you know, it's kind of brought it back around that these
connections
like that, you know, you think, well, this is weird that all of a sudden she shows up and, you know, she was part of what started some of these things, you know, before it was a party into what happened. Because it's like one thing led to another, because probably without Joseph, you don't know. I mean, Annie might have gone on to some other pursuit, you know, that she almost felt like that was maybe a sign to her that she needed to pursue this, because she never had, just like Joseph, she'd never had any formal art training.
Right.
But, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it was almost like she had these visions of what she wanted to do. It's a good thing that, that her wife-to-be was probably pretty forgiving, because could you imagine most people, if they came home and they saw these very expensive designer wedding dresses had all been ripped. You think, whoa.
Well, she wasn't hard up for money, so it was okay.
You know, you came home and somebody had taken something of yours and shredded it all up and made it into art project, you kind of like, have they lost their mind?
I know.
But, you know, she did. She just kind of looked at this, and then she just had this, you know, compulsion or whatever.
That's an artist.
Because your average person would think...
Yeah, well, Viveka wasn't your average person.
No.
And her thing was, oh my God, you know, whatever qualms she might have had about, you know, the destruction of the dresses went right out of her head when she saw what Annie created.
It's like, oh.
So she was, she was, you know, definitely that art connoisseur. So
probably it would end up those pieces would sell for more than the dresses themselves.
Exactly.
It was a win-win situation.
All right. So that is our discussion of We Are Water by Wally Lamb. thank you for tuning in and listening. And as always, please leave us your comments. If you've read We Are Water, we want to know what you think. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing The Kitchen Daughter by J.L. McHenry. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.